Chapter 46. The Dream of Arbaces. A Visitor and a Warning to the Egyptian. The awful night preceding the fierce joy of the amphitheater rolled drearily away, and greyly broke forth the dawn of the last day of Pompeii. The air was uncommonly calm and sultry a thin, and dull mist gathered over the valleys and hollows of the broad Campanian fields. But yet it was remarked in surprise by the early fishermen, that, despite the exceeding stillness of the atmosphere, the waves of the sea were agitated, and seemed, as it were, to run disturbedly back from the shore, while along the blue and stately Sarnus, whose ancient breadth of channel the traveler now vainly seeks to discover, there crept a hoarse and sullen murmur, as it glided by the laughing plains and the gaudy villas of the wealthy citizens. Clear above the low mist rose the time-worn towers of the immemorial town, the red-tiled roofs of the bright streets, the solemn columns of many temples, and the statue-crowned portals of the Forum and the Arch of Triumph. Far in the distance, the outline of the circling hills soared above the vapors, and mingled with the changeful hues of the morning sky. The cloud that had so long rested over the crest of Vesuvius had suddenly vanished, and its rugged and haughty brow looked without a frown over the beautiful scenes below. Despite the earliness of the hour, the gates of the city were already opened. Horsemen upon horsemen, vehicle after vehicle, poured rapidly in, and the voices of numerous pedestrian groups, clad in holiday attire, rose high in joyous and excited merriment. The streets were crowded with citizens and strangers from the populous neighborhood of Pompeii, and noisily fast confusedly swept the many streams of life towards the fatal show. Despite the vast size of the amphitheater, seemingly so disproportioned to the extent of the city, and formed to include nearly the whole population of Pompeii itself, so great, on extraordinary occasions, was the concourse of strangers from all parts of Campania, that the space before it was usually crowded for several hours previous to the commencement of the sports, by such persons as were not entitled by their rank to appointed and special seats. And the intense curiosity which the trial and sentence of two criminals so remarkable had occasioned, increased the crowd on this day to an extent wholly unprecedented. While the common people, with the lively vehemence of their Campanian blood, were thus pushing, scrambling, hurrying on yet, amidst all their eagerness, preserving, as is now the wont with Italians in such meetings, a wonderful order and unquarrelsome good humor, a strange visitor to Arbaces was threading her way to his sequestered mansion. At the sight of her quaint and primeval garb of her wild gait, and gestures the passengers she encountered, touched each other and smiled, but as they caught a glimpse of her countenance, the mirth was hushed at once, for the face was as the face of the dead, and, what with the ghastly features and obsolete robes of the stranger, it seemed as if one long entombed had risen once more amongst the living. In silence and awe each group gave way as she passed along, and she soon gained the broad porch of the Egyptian's palace. The black porter, like the rest of the world, astir at an unusual hour, started as he opened the door to her summons. The sleep of the Egyptian had been usually profound during the night, but, as the dawn approached, it was disturbed by strange and unquiet dreams, which impressed him the more as they were colored by the peculiar philosophy he embraced. He thought that he was transported to the bowels of the earth, and that he stood alone in a mighty cavern supported by enormous columns of rough and primeval rock, lost, as they ascended, in the vastness of a shadow athwart whose eternal darkness no beam of day had ever glanced. And in the space between these columns were huge wheels, that whirled round and round unceasingly, and with a rushing and roaring noise. Only to the right and left extremities of the cavern, the space between the pillars was left bare, and the apertures stretched away into galleries not wholly dark, but dimly lighted by wandering and erratic fires, that, meteor-like, now crept as the snake creeps along the rugged and dank soil, and now leaped fiercely to and fro, darting across the vast gloom in wild gambols, suddenly disappearing, and as suddenly bursting into tenfold brilliance and power. and while he gazed wonderingly upon the gallery to the left, thin, mist-like, aerial shapes passed slowly up, and when they had gained the hall they seemed to rise aloft, and to vanish, as the smoke vanishes, in the measureless ascent. He turned in fear towards the opposite extremity, and behold, there came swiftly, from the gloom above, similar shadows, which swept hurriedly along the gallery to the right, as if borne involuntarily adown the sides of some invisible stream, and the faces of these specters were more distinct than those that emerged from the opposite passage, and on some was joy, and on others sorrow. Some were vivid with expectation and hope, some unutterably dejected by awe and horror. And so they passed, swift and constantly on, till the eyes of the gazer grew dizzy and blinded with the whirl of an ever-varying succession of things impelled by a power apparently not their own. Arbaces turned away, and, in the recess of the hall, he saw the mighty form of a giantess seated upon a pile of skulls, and her hands were busy upon a pale and shadowy woof. And he saw that the woof communicated with the numberless wheels, as if it guided the machinery of their movements. He thought his feet, by some secret agency, were impelled towards the female, and that he was borne onwards till he stood before her, face to face. The countenance of the giantess was solemn and hushed, and beautifully serene. It was as the face of some colossal sculpture of his own ancestral sphinx. No passion, no human emotion, disturbed its brooding and unwrinkled brow. There was neither sadness, nor joy, nor memory, nor hope. It was free from all with which the wild human heart can sympathize. The mystery of mysteries rested on its beauty. It awed, but terrified not. It was the incarnation of the sublime. And Arbaces felt the voice leave his lips, without an impulse of his own. And the voice asked, "Who art thou, and what is thy task?" "I am that which thou hast acknowledged," answered, without desisting from its work, the mighty phantom. "My name is Nature. These are the wheels of the world, and my hand guides them for the life of all things." "And what," said the voice of Arbaces, "are these galleries, that strangely and fitfully illumined, stretch on either hand into the abyss of gloom?" "Answered the giant mother, "which thou beholdest to the left, is the gallery of the unborn. The shadows that flit onward and upward into the world, are the souls, that pass from the long eternity of being to their destined pilgrimage on earth. That which thou beholdest to thy right, wherein the shadows descending from above sweep on, equally unknown and dim, is the gallery of the dead." "And wherefore," said the voice of Arbaces, "yon wandering lights, that so wildly break the darkness, but only break, not reveal?" "Dark fool of the human sciences, dreamer of the stars, and would-be decipherer of the heart and origin of things. Those lights are but the glimmerings of such knowledge as is vouchsafed to nature to work her way, to trace enough of the past and future to give providence to her designs. Judge, then, puppet as thou art, what lights are reserved for thee?" Arbaces felt himself tremble as he asked again, "Wherefore am I here?" "It is the forecast of thy soul, the prescience of thy rushing doom, the shadow of thy fate lengthening into eternity as declines from earth." Ere he could answer, Arbaces felt a rushing wind sweep down the cavern, as the winds of a giant god. Born aloft from the ground, and whirled on high as a leaf in the storms of autumn, he beheld himself in the midst of the specters of the dead, and hurrying with them along the length of gloom. As in vain and impotent despair he struggled against the impelling power, he thought the wind grew into something like a shape, a spectral outline of the wings and talons of an eagle, with limbs floating far and indistinctly along the air, and eyes that, alone clearly and vividly seen, glared stonily and remorselessly on his own. "What art thou?" Again said the voice of the Egyptian. "I am that which thou hast acknowledged." And the specter laughed aloud, "And my name is Necessity." apostrophe apostrophe, to what dost thou bear me? Apostrophe apostrophe, to the unknown. Apostrophe apostrophe, to happiness or to woe. Apostrophe apostrophe, as thou hast sown, so shalt thou reap. Apostrophe apostrophe, dread thing, not so. If thou art the ruler of life, thine are my misdeeds, not mine. Apostrophe apostrophe, I am but the breath of God. Apostrophe apostrophe, answered the mighty wind. Then is my wisdom vain. Apostrophe apostrophe, groaned the dreamer. The husbandman accuses not fate, when, having sown thistles, he reaps not corn. Thou hast sown crime, accuse not fate, if thou reapest not the harvest of virtue. Apostrophe apostrophe, the scene suddenly changed. Arbaces was in a place of human bones, and lo, in the midst of them was a skull, and the skull, still retaining its fleshless hollows, assumed slowly, and in the mysterious confusion of a dream, the face of Apocytes. And forth from the grinning jaws there crept a small worm, and it crawled to the feet of Arbaces. He attempted to stamp on it and crush it, but it became longer and larger with that attempt. It swelled and bloated till it grew into a vast serpent. It coiled itself round the limbs of Arbaces. It crunched his bones. It raised its glaring eyes and poisonous jaws to his face. He writhed in vain. He withered. He gasped beneath the influence of the blighting breath. He felt himself blasted into death. And then a voice came from the reptile, which still bore the face of Apocytes, and rang in his reeling ear. Thy victim is thy judge. The worm thou wouldst crush becomes the serpent that devours thee. Apostrophe apostrophe, with a shriek of wrath, and woe, and despairing resistance, Arbaces awoke, his hair on end, his brow bathed in dew, his eyes glazed, and staring, his mighty frame quivering as an infant's, beneath the agony of that dream. He awoke, he collected himself, he blessed the gods whom he disbelieved, that he was in a dream. He turned his eyes from side to side, he saw the dawning light break through his small but lofty window. He was in the precincts of day. He rejoiced, he smiled, his eyes fell, and opposite to him, he beheld the ghastly features, the lifeless eye, the livid lip of the hag of Vesuvius. Ha! Apostrophe apostrophe, he cried, placing his hands before his eyes, as to shut out the grisly vision. Do I dream still? Am I with the dead? Apostrophe, mighty Hermes, no. Thou art with one death-like, but not dead. Recognize thy friend and slave. Apostrophe apostrophe, there was a long silence. Slowly the shudders, that passed over the limbs of the Egyptian, chased each other away, faintlier and faintlier, dying till he was himself again. It was a dream, then, apostrophe said he. Well, let me dream no more, or the day cannot compensate for the pangs of night. Woman, how camest thou here, and wherefore? Apostrophe apostrophe, I came to warn thee, apostrophe answered the sepulchral voice of the saga. Warn me. The dream lied not, then? Of what peril? Apostrophe, listen to me. Some evil hangs over this fated city. Fly while it be time. Thou knowest that I hold my home on that mountain beneath which old tradition saith there yet burn the fires of the river of Phlegethon. And in my cavern is a vast abyss, and in that abyss I have of late marked a red and dull stream creep slowly, slowly on, and heard many and mighty sounds hissing and roaring through the gloom. But last night, as I looked thereon, behold, the stream was no longer dull, but intensely and fiercely luminous. And while I gazed, the beast that liveth with me, and was cowering by my side, uttered a shrill howl, and fell down and died, and the slaver and froth were round his lips. I crept back to my lair, but I distinctly heard, all the night, the rock shake and tremble, and, though the air was heavy and still, there were the hissing of pent winds, and the grinding as of wheels, beneath the ground. So, when I rose this morning at the very birth of dawn, I looked again down the abyss, and I saw vast fragments of stone borne black, unfloatingly over the lurid stream, and the stream itself was broader, fiercer, redder than the night before. Then I went forth, and ascended to the summit of the rock. And in that summit there appeared a sudden and vast hollow, which I had never perceived before, from which curled a dim, faint smoke, and the vapor was deathly, and I gasped, and sickened, and nearly died. I returned home. I took my gold and my drugs, and left the habitation of many years. For I remembered the dark Etruscan prophecy which saith, when the mountain opens, the city shall fall, when the smoke crowns the hill of the parched fields, there shall be woe and weeping in the hearts of the children of the sea. Dread master, ere I leave these walls for some more distant dwelling, I come to thee. As thou livest, know I in my heart, that the earthquake, that 16 years ago shook this city to its solid base, was but the forerunner of more deadly doom. The walls of Pompeii are built above the fields of the dead, and the rivers of the sleepless hell. Be warned and fly. Apostrophe, which, I thank thee for thy care of one not ungrateful. On yon table stands a cup of gold, take it, it is thine. I dreamt not that there lived one, out of the priesthood of Isis, who would have saved Arbaces from destruction. The signs thou hast seen in the bed of the extinct volcano, apostrophe continued the Egyptian, musingly, surely tell of some coming danger to the city, perhaps another earthquake fiercer than the last. Be that as it may, there is a new reason for my hastening from these walls. After this day I will prepare my departure. Daughter of Etruria, whither wendest thou? Apostrophe, I shall cross over to Herculaneum this day, and, wandering thence along the coast, shall seek out a new home. I am friendless. My two companions, the fox and the snake, are dead. Great Hermes, thou hast promised me 20 additional years of life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I, apostrophe, said the Egyptian, I have promised thee. But, woman, apostrophe, he added, lifting himself upon his arm, and gazing curiously on her face, tell me, I pray thee, wherefore thou wishest to live? What sweets dost thou discover in existence? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is not life that is sweet, but death that is awful, apostrophe, replied the hag, in a sharp, impressive tone, that struck forcibly upon the heart of the vain star-seer. He winced at the truth of the reply, and no longer anxious to retain so uninviting a companion, he said, time wanes, I must prepare for the solemn spectacle of this day. Sister, farewell. Enjoy thyself as thou canst over the ashes of life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the hag, who had placed the costly gift of Arbaces in the loose folds of her vest, now rose to depart. When as he had gained the door she paused, turned back, and said, this may be the last time we meet on earth, but whither fleeth the flame, when it leaves the ashes? Wandering to and fro, up and down, as an exhalation on the morass, the flame may be seen in the marshes of the lake below, and the witch and the magian, the pupil and the master, the great one and the accursed one, may meet again. Farewell. Apostrophe, out, croaker. Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered Arbaces, as the door closed on the hag's tattered robes, and, impatient of his own thoughts, not yet recovered from the past dream, he hastily summoned his slaves. It was the custom to attend the ceremonials of the amphitheater in festive robes, and Arbaces arrayed himself that day with more than usual care. His tunic was of the most dazzling white. His many fibulae were formed from the most precious stones. Over his tunic flowed a loose eastern robe, half gown, half mantle, glowing in the richest hues of the Tyrian dye, and the sandals, that reached halfway up the knee, were studded with gems, and inlaid with gold. In the quackeries, that belonged to his priestly genius, Arbaces never neglected, on great occasions, the arts which dazzle and impose upon the vulgar. And on this day, that was forever to release him, by the sacrifice of Glaucus, from the fear of a rival and the chance of detection, he felt that he was arraying himself as for a triumph or a nuptial feast. It was customary for men of rank to be accompanied to the shows of the amphitheater by a procession of their slaves and freedmen, and the long family of Arbaces were already arranged in order to attend the litter of their lord. Only, to their great chagrin, the slaves in attendance on Ion, and the worthy Soja, as Galler to Nidia, were condemned to remain at home. Callias, apostrophe said Arbaces, apart to his freedman, who was buckling on his girdle, I am weary of Pompeia. I propose to quit it in 3 days, should the wind favor. Thou knowest the vessel that lies in the harbor which belonged to Narses, of Alexandria. I have purchased it of him. The day after tomorrow we shall begin to remove my stores. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so soon. 'Tis well. Arbaces shall be obeyed and his ward, Ion. Apostrophe, accompanies me. Enough. Is the morning fair? Apostrophe, dim and oppressive. It will probably be intensely hot in the forenoon. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the poor gladiators, and more wretched criminals. Descend, and see that the slaves are marshaled. Apostrophe, apostrophe, left alone, Arbaces stepped into his chamber of study, and thence upon the portico without. He saw the dense masses of men pouring fast into the amphitheater, and heard the cry of the assistants, and the cracking of the cordage, as they were straining aloft the huge awning under which the citizens, molested by no discomforting ray, were to behold, at luxurious ease, the agonies of their fellow creatures. Suddenly a wild strange sound went forth, and as suddenly died away it was the roar of the lion. There was a silence in the distant crowd, but the silence was followed by joyous laughter. They were making merry at the hungry impatience of the royal beast. Brutes! Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered the disdainful Arbaces, are ye less homicides than I am? I slay but in self-defense, ye make murder pastime. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he turned with a restless and curious eye towards Vesuvius. Beautifully glowed the green vineyards round its breast, and tranquil as eternity lay in the breathless skies the form of the mighty hill. We have time yet, if the earthquake be nursing, apostrophe thought Arbaces, and he turned from the spot. He passed by the table which bore his mystic scrolls and Chaldean calculations. August art. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he thought, I have not consulted thy decrees, since I passed the danger and the crisis they foretold. What matter? I know that henceforth all in my path is bright and smooth. Have not events already proved it? Away, doubt away, pity. Reflect, O my heart, reflect, for the future, but two images, empire and Ion. Apostrophe, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.